Somebody help me!
In 2023, Alone Australia became the biggest original series in SBS history.
It's just us, completely alone.
And this year, it's back.
I feel free.
I feel trapped. I'm hungry.
So scared.
I feel a bowel motion coming on.
10 brave Aussies will take on the South Island of New Zealand, separated from each other and the rest of the world.
It's not my time to die.
The new season of Alone Australia starts 27th of March on SBS and on demand.
Okay, super excited about tonight. I'm a massive fan of Alone, and season two is coming up. It's out on Wednesday, the 27th of March. So, got another little bit to wait, but I'm really excited because we're joined by one of the contestants and a hunter himself. Chase, how are you? Thanks for coming on.
G'day, man. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Mate, I'm good. I'm super excited for the, obviously, season. We'll talk about that a bit later, but I really wanted to find out about you and a bit of your background because you are a hunter. How did that start? I love hearing people's journeys.
Well, I started before I could remember, to be honest. There's, maybe I could find it one of these days, but Dad took me out and sat me on a stag and got a good old school photo of me. And, you know, now some of my earliest memories are out here in southeast Queensland, just in the ute, shooting stags off the hills or whatever. And yeah, I suppose that's where it all started. So you kind of learn to love it before you can even remember that you loved it.
Mate, well, see, I'm the opposite here. So I'm a first-generation hunter, and my dad was a professional sports player, and so that was where we all grew up into sport and the like. And
yeah.
It was always something that was on the side, not so much the hunting, but fishing and camping and hiking. That was always there.
Still outdoors.
Yeah, outdoors. And then I made the sort of transition because was in the army for a bit there and then shooting. So I believe you're sort of similar in a couple of ways. But, mate, what have you found? Like, it's a big thing when you start hunting and as a young fella getting involved, what are you chasing the most and what do you enjoy chasing the most, I suppose?
Oh, now that's a deep question, isn't it? Because it's so personal to everyone that goes out and does it. But one thing in common for everyone is just this deep-seated love for Australia and the love of nature and just being out amongst it, really, because we love Australia. We love being out in the bush and we love what Australia has to offer in that aspect, right? What you're chasing is the, it nearly feels a little bit prehistoric, I guess, getting out there, feeding yourself and your family and just being capable of being able to do that, I suppose. That's a massive driver for me. I just love that.
I think you're right. I love the fact that we just have access to go out and hunt our own game and provide food for the family and do everything yourself. How did you go learning that? Was it helpful having like family members teach you that? Because, you know, I sort of jumped into a TAFE course and a kangaroo harvester course to get my accreditation because I didn't have that background or people to show me. Is that sort of that family connection?
Well, yeah. I grew up on stories of grandma and grandpa over in Western Australia having to go out and shoot a roo just to survive the week sort of thing. And then when I started bringing my own deer home and hanging it up on grandma's porch, you couldn't imagine how proud grandpa was at the time. Or, you know, when I called dad in a bit of a fit because I just could not drag this deer out of the scrub by myself. It was one of the first deer I ever shot and chittled. I'm just like, Dad, come help me, please. I'm dying here. I can't get this thing out of the scrub. I can't pick it up. And there he was. He came out, hands on his hips. He's just like, well done, mate. And then after that, yeah, you take it home and it's all very important to use as much of that animal as possible. Because from people like that, when Dad was growing up, it was nearly currency too. His dad would take the back straps and he got the rest. So that sort of stuff.
I don't know about you, but I always find when I'm out hunting, I really feel a deep connection with my ancestors. And yeah. I'm a Gamilaroi man, so I have that Aboriginal heritage. And it just takes me back. I feel at home in the bush. And, you know, we have such a fast-paced modern world. just getting outside for 2 days and just, you know, I try and pick places there's no cell phone reception because I don't want to be contacted.
Yeah.
Is that a driving force for you when you get out into the bush and you're out there hunting?
Absolutely. And you feel like you're honoring your ancestors, aren't you? That's a surreal feeling. You just feel like you're following in those footsteps and it feels like the right thing to do.
I genuinely feel that when I'm out there, I just have so much more respect for the people that came before us because, you know, we have modern technology, we have fantastic rifles these days and scopes, and I cast back and think, oh my God, how tough it would have been
incredible
to be on the landscape without these things. Like, it's hard enough to hunt as it is. And you cast back and you're thinking about, you know, the traditional owners, you know, running around with boomerangs and a warmer and a spear and go, my God, they must have been so damn talented.
Oh, yeah. To have everything you needed and a few essential tools and be as much of a multi-tool as possible at the same time, and being able to find the raw materials at the place of need, really, and whatever that might be, making bush rope or a basket or even pottery and stuff like that, and then come later on, I've been in some amazing places in Australia. I used to get into a lot of gold detecting and gold panning and prospecting and going out Sapphire and Ruby Vale, fossicking and whatnot. But I also used to stand back a little bit and just think, who the hell came out here first and found this? Well, I'm up in some massive forest and I don't know who the hell just waltzed into this bloody forest here and just went, oh, I reckon there's gold here and found it. Like, what the... They're just incredible people, incredible stories, and oh my God.
It's like that exploring nature, isn't it? I don't know about you, but I love hunting, and it's not even about the chase or getting the animal. It's about just being out in the bush. It's about exploring, potentially being somewhere that no one has been in a long time, if ever. You just don't know. And some of the things I've found out there are so cool, and the experiences that I've had. Yeah. There's just nothing better, whether it be with native animals, whether it be with the quarry you're chasing. Mm. Mate, you've got some pretty cool background stories with, I guess, hunts that other people probably haven't been exposed to with some of our traditional owners. Do you want to give the audience a bit of a heads up on some of those stories?
Yeah, well, growing up, I'm a Quandamooka man myself, being an Aborigine. But removed from country and family pretty early on, and grew up in the Whitsundays there. So I grew up around a lot of Torres Strait Islanders instead. And I was lucky enough that they sort of liked having me around enough to take me out turtle hunting, dugong hunting, out in the boat and with a spear. And instead of doing a walkabout, you know, instead me and a buddy of mine, we went dugong hunting one time and it's a brutal experience, and it's a very humbling experience to do that manually, to say the least. And traditionally, and we actually got that dugong for a wedding in this occasion, and just a wholesome experience of just the circle of life, really, and their needs and the traditions around it.
I feel like we've lost that these days. I feel like we are so disconnected as a society about what hunting really is. And you touched on it then, saying it's the circle of life. Mm. And I think that's so important, and reflecting on what our ancestors did and being so in tuned with nature is a massive thing that we've lost these days.
Yeah.
If you could, how could you, you know, explore that, I guess, that ability to teach others about the world we live in, you know, and how much hunting plays such an important role for conservation and for just being mental health, you name it. There's so many positive elements. You know, how do we get across that to people?
Well, I think for starters, people need to remember that you have a place in the food chain and in nature. We're not removed from it. We're still very much a part of it. And you know, regardless of how far advanced technology is, we're still a part of this world. And that's a massive starting point, because it just feels like that disconnect from that very, very essential truth. And from there, like you said, there's so many benefits to it. Conservation is a massive one to it. And that relates back to that first point, being a part of the food chain, is you have a responsibility in the food chain. It's unfortunate, but there's a lot of feral animals doing a lot of damage in Australia. And it's only us who are going to fix it, because you can't let it run its course, or the balance of nature truly is just going to be out of whack forever.
I think what you said there just resonates, because for me, I think we've removed ourselves so much that people don't see us as a part of nature and a part of the landscape. And that's what we are. We, you know, have been on the landscape for thousands of years, and we have been existing, coexisting, keeping nature in balance. And I think we're removed from that now. And it's important, I think, that the tradition of hunting, and I guess more people need to see the reality of hunting, is that it's conservation, it's feeding family, it's keeping wildlife numbers in check. And that benefits animals too, because if you've got too many on the landscape, we know that it will do damage to those animals. There's starvation, diseases spread, there's so many elements. But I think we're so far away from that nowadays. And that's one of the things I've really tried to promote with this podcast and inform people, because it's such an important thing. And that's one of the things I love about Alone, and that it's giving people a bit of a glimpse at how hard it potentially could be on the landscape with limited resources, like our ancestors did do this. So let's talk about bushcraft, because for me, bushcraft is something I dabble in, probably not well.
There's that hunting was just is one point in that scale, really, because the bushcraft, and as you find watching Alone across all the seasons, that's only one part of the puzzle, isn't it? Because there's people out there who are excellent botanists and all sorts of different skills, and fishermen and craftsmen and the lot, really. So just like Alone's brilliant for it, because it brings 10 contestants together who aren't just cookie cutter survival experts. We got people from all different walks, really. Yeah.
No, that's exciting. And I think, as I said, bushcraft for me is a big one. And it's something that I dabble, but not well. And is that one of your strengths? Are you, we know you hunt, and that's something you're passionate about, but is there the bushcraft side too?
Yeah. Well, there's nothing better than I've been a blacksmith for a long time. And you take something from your mind, an idea, and then sometime later it's right in front of you, it's tangible. And bushcraft's an excellent place to do that. Oh, I want to do this, and you need to have the know-how in order to do it, whether that's building a shelter or a tool that you need, or a tool to make the tool and sometimes. And bushcraft is just a wonderful feeling to just feel like you're a capable person of basically making something out of nothing, because that's the basis of being a craftsman.
Oh, there's like that sort of MacGyver mindset that, being able to critically think and problem solve and utilize the resources you've got at your disposal as best possible. Yeah. How did you come about getting into that and learning that?
I suppose just boredom to begin with. As a kid, you're going inside and telling grandpa that you're bored was not a smart thing to do. So instead, you'd be out the back trying to figure how to not be bored before he put you to work or did something like. So boredom to begin with, and just I think it's very important to have your kids actually have the availability to be out in nature and be bored enough to let their little imaginations run wild, and that's where it's going to start right there, because they'll find a way to keep themselves occupied eventually, and when they do, they'll run with it.
I agree. I've got 18-month-old twins and a 3.5-year-old, and it's very interesting because I'm not a big one for a lot of TV. A little bit of screen time, yes, you need it. You need technology skills.
Yep.
But I like to limit it, and I like them to be creative and make their own games and play and just get out. And we're very lucky that we've got our own veggie garden and chooks and dogs and et cetera, et cetera. So for me, watching them develop those skills and play around, it's fantastic. And I think more should do that, and you know, which is a struggle because here in Sydney there's so many units and buildings and not much of that area to do. So that's a bit of a problem.
And you can get in trouble for being out in the wrong place, or it's just so constricted having not being able to look over your own fence. It's just...
It's a change, and you know, I understand with the population we've got to go there, but I think we're losing something, and I think that our young kids are losing the ability to be able to be creative because they've got that instant gratification playing a video game, and it's not the same as having to find something that's exciting or play. You know, I reflect, and I've said it before on the podcast, my grandfather made me a wooden rifle, and I had thumbtacks that I made my little name on it. So my brother and I, you know, ran around pretending we were shooting at each other and playing a bit of war and things like that. But yeah, they are some of the memories that I remember. I don't remember playing video games. I don't remember sitting there watching TV all the time. It's those little things. And that's gone nowadays. Now I look at the Nerf guns that's running around and go, man, they're just a different level.
Yeah.
What are you chasing these days when you're out hunting? And what did you start with? Like for most of us, we start with sort of that small game, bunnies and foxes. Were you the same or did you jump straight to deer? How did that play out?
From a solo level, absolutely. Just chasing the old bunny around, make myself a boomerang and chuck it at the hare in the front yard. And then... foxes I used to go chasing after a lot too, because there's plenty of those about. And then fishing and yabbies and all that sort of, they're all what I would consider small game, and it was what was available too. And yeah, so you start off there and eventually you make a relationship with someone or get availability somewhere, and someone takes you out pig hunting and you're chasing pigs, and that's the next great rage, and it just develops from there, I guess. Yeah.
Do you find every different quarry has an allure about it?
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
I'm big on just, I like to go out there and do a bit of everything. And I don't want to pigeonhole myself in because I like to learn new things. And I sort of say to myself, I've got that growth mindset. I'm always looking to become better and evaluate myself and things like that.
Yeah.
Is that what you do looking at this whole process? So, you know, before you got onto Alone, where was it that you sort of felt, hey, my skills are good enough to sort of think about a show like this?
Well, a long time ago, I moved away from where I grew up and started a new life, basically. Went away from just being the little kickabout, blowabout fella, and started trying to mature as an adult, really, because it was when I was 18 years old and I was in a bad spot in life. And I met my blacksmith teacher, and I could probably credit him with being the start of just all everything that I'm good at now, being at blacksmithing, woodworking, jewelry making, can make a bow from scratch, can make string, I can tan leather, I can make my own arrows, I can forge my own arrowheads and knives and axes. And this old fellow, I was just his last apprentice, really, and he introduced me to some of the last accredited blacksmiths in Australia and got training under them. And I don't know if I'd be even half the man if I didn't meet that old fella. His name's Ken Tanks, by the way. He's getting old now.
I'm a teacher, so I understand the importance. You know, I always say I absolutely love what I do. I'm a high school teacher, and that there's nothing greater than instilling a passion for learning or skills onto the next generation. It's something that I can see it obviously is a big thing to you, and that he meant so much to you in teaching you those things. Mm. And it's hard to describe to people. That's what I love about my job. It's not the money. It's not the holidays. It's when you see a student just change their life or just, you know, have a passion and they tell you that you were such an influential person on them. So it's, I get that. And I've had that. And that's why I became a teacher, because I sat there and went, you know, what, my life could have been very, very different. And I was very lucky to have some really good mentors that were teachers. So trying to give back and do that. I mean, for me, looking at you as a whole and hearing about all these things, you've got a vast array of talents. Is this where you sort of went, hey, you know what? I reckon a show like Alone, I'm going to be good at. And how did you, you know, sort of get into that? Like, where did that come from, the drive to want to do it? I mean, most people watch something, but they don't really want to get outside their comfort zone, and it doesn't look comfortable.
Well, it was very, I felt very unattainable at first. Some friends sent it to me just through Messenger, the link saying apply for next year's show. And I was out on exercise at the time, and I got the reply, and it slowly became more and more real. I'm still sitting there telling myself, like, no, why me? There's a million other people who want to be on the show. Incredibly flabbergasting experience to have them return the phone calls and say, hey, we want to see more. And I couldn't believe it. So the drive for it, I suppose it started off as curiosity and just throw your name in the hat, because you've got to be in it to win it, right? And that's a mantra right there. And then as things progressed, right until the very end, I just couldn't believe that it was going to be me. I know I'm an odd sort of fellow because I'm very young and I do all these crazy stuff, but just didn't think I'd have this opportunity, and I'm just blessed to have it.
Yeah, it's bloody cool, and hats off to you being a younger fellow having a crack at this, because a lot of people, as I said, probably just watch it and wouldn't even dream of applying or even have the skill sets. How did you get picked? I mean, obviously you've got a lot of skill sets here, but you said you're younger. What were some of the things that you did to stand out?
There's probably 100 other contestants out there that could have taken my spot. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the producers and their 10 contestants and just not having the same 10 people on the show. So I suppose my main skill actually was being a storyteller, to be honest. I'm just thinking about that now. You've got to be a storyteller in order to go on a TV show. And You have to be able to connect with people, and you have to be able to speak to people, even though they're not in front of you, but you're still speaking to a camera. And I needed to speak to the hearts of people. And I suppose I've always been good at that, because I'm I love my people. Even at work, I'm a very sort of social guy. I like to get involved with everybody and what they're doing. So yeah, that was definitely one of my strengths coming in there. Aside from my survival and bushcraft skills and my military mindset and rah, 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 and it would have boiled down, I think, to just being someone to be able to have a yarn, tell a story. Someone might want to listen to me.
I mean, that's cool within itself. You know, I get that vibe from you, of course. What did you do to prepare? Yeah, so once you got the tick saying, hey, yeah, you're going to go, or were you in the process and you went, I better start thinking about preparing for this journey now? Was there things you needed to upskill, practice? Was there?
Like I said, I was out on exercise at the time, so I was practicing all right. And then I got home, and I said, I better go hunting. I better brush up on my archery. I better start studying and learn how to start a fire properly. I was already pretty good at it, but you just brush the rust off the old knife, eh? Yeah, so I just kept at it, really. I invested a lot in my gear, and I've got out in the scrub as much as I could. I shot plenty of deer in that interim, and I went and munched on as much Lamandra longifolia as I could, and I cooked up bloody Banksia seeds, and I made some bush sweet water, and I just kept going, really.
Did it ever run through your head that you were potentially underprepared going into something like this? Because
of course.
Did you study other seasons and watch the American version? Because, you know, there's a million different ones, and I know they're different places and things like that, but they've got a vast array from being at Patagonia or being in Alaska, and, you know, it's not the same sort of. Yeah, well, I'm the same. So I absolutely just love them. And it's a different level, isn't it? I sit there and watch the American stuff and go, man, the bears and the cougars and I think Patagonia with the cougars just being outside. I don't know how you could prepare for things like that. And Did things like that cross your mind when you're doing it, or were you just focusing on the bare essentials, the bare basics to make sure you're as honed as possible and prepared as best you could be?
Well, the psychology of the show has always been a massive thing. So I didn't know how to prepare for that. I didn't know how to. The only way to be good at being alone was to go and be alone, but you've got to work and there's jobs to do and there's just life pressure. So that was all you could do is a weekend in the swag or get used to your own thoughts. But watching American seasons and just seeing these incredible people, and it was always very daunting and thinking to myself, how am I going to live up to any single one of these contestants? Even it doesn't matter if you're the first one to drop out or the last one, because they're all incredible people. So I just don't know. I definitely concentrate on the bare essentials. I definitely just tried to hone that, and knowing that in a stressful situation, all you're going to do is fall back onto your lowest level of training. So that's all I did.
Yeah, nice. I think, did you find the army helped you with that a fair bit, having that background?
Well, that sounded very army, didn't it? Like, yeah, absolutely. You're going to fall back to your lowest level of training, aren't you? So, yeah, I was a bit of a mindset going in there, just keep drilling. And when the shit hits the fan, you'll just fall back to what you know.
Yeah, so I remember that very well in the army. Just keep doing it and doing it and doing it over and over and over, and that's how you get better at it, or it just becomes second nature. And I think that it's important, that discipline. And I think that I'm a big fan of everything that I learnt there, and it was a great time in my life.
Yeah.
I sometimes think I'd love to see it sort of like a, you know, young people go out of school and at least go through basic training or something like that. I think we'd have a different sort of society and community with a much more appreciation and maybe some higher skills in different areas and respect and the like.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It'd be nice and without the pressure of having to do extra service, but at least do basic training, absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of obviously conscripting people to go over to you know, combat and things like that, but I think it would be a really good eye-opener for a lot of people, because a lot of people never get to experience any of those things. And it's pretty funny. I have so many people in my life that they don't camp at all. They've never been camping. And it's insane to think that, you know, something I take for granted, because it's just, I've just grown up doing it. And I talk to people and they have zero idea. And I've tried to take out a lot of people that have no experience and get them to try and teach them, and they don't know how to put up a tent. And it's pretty interesting because, as you sort of said, skills are learnt or developed, and you were lucky enough to have, you know, a really good mentor for that. A lot of people don't. How do you learn like that if they've got no exposure to people that can teach them? And I think that it's important that people understand those things. You know, we've got so much resource. Technology is brilliant in one sense. You can just find everything.
Yeah.
Did you do any of that? Was there ever jumping on YouTube and checking out, you know, other ways to do things with your bushcraft and your skills?
That's how I spent my night times before bed, searching up bushcraft things, whether that was making a log cabin or making bush rope. Yeah, that's all. Absolutely. Yeah, and people who haven't been exposed need to remember it's not too late. doesn't matter how old you are, it's not too late. It's still right there. It's just got to go out and grab it.
I agree with you. I'm of the mindset that I just hit 40, and you know, I've been a PE teacher, pretty physically active job, and that's what I love. I always wanted to be outside and doing stuff and whatnot. And I just look at some other mates that are 40 and it's worrying because they don't do much exercise or workout, and you can see that.
The different lifestyles, man, yeah.
Were you sitting there going, I need to be fit to get onto this, you know, in the lead up, was that also part of your preparation?
I was having a hard time putting on weight being so young. Oh, my God, it was a struggle. And you watch me complain about that in 10 years, right? Like, just – I was eating Maccas and...
It catches you quick. I'll tell you that now.
I had to slow down a lot because every calorie I put in was just getting burnt off, especially especially at work, because it's always a very high octane sort of thing, isn't it? You do PT every single day. And then there's jobs on. You got something on all the time. And I even had a Field X in there, like I said. And I was fortunate that I actually come off a bit of an injury, but which slowed me down a bit. So, and I had the excuse to slow down. So,
I find that's one of my biggest issues. Is I can't like stop. Like, so I'll go for a run, and I'll be trying to tell myself, go slow. You know, I want to do a long run today, and I'll still do the long run, but I'll do it way too quick a pace. And yeah, I feel like I'm bludging, and I feel like I just got to, I look at blokes like Cameron Haynes and Joe Rogan, and I sort of just sit there and go, pull your finger out, get moving, stop being a little crybaby and get out there.
It takes discipline, and doing a zone two run is very much a leave your ego at the door kind of exercise, because it's boring. And at some stages you could break it down for a walk if you've not really developed that, a long slow distance at a zone two pace can be very monotonous, but it's also very healthy.
So mate, let's get back to hunting. What type do you like to do? How do you find you like to chase game?
You do a bit of everything. Definitely love a good spot and stalk, because I enjoy the stalk. And then you just, I might stalk on through to that next feature. Sit up there, have a look. I've got absolute bloody laser eyes when it comes to spotting deer. Sometimes I take blokes out and they're just like, how the bloody hell did you spot that? It's a kilometer away and you didn't have your binoculars up. And it's just an adaption, isn't it? So... And I love me spotting and stalking, because that's hunting, isn't it? And you got to do that if you're going to be a bow hunter too, unless you're an ambush bow hunter, which is a lot of waiting around. Yeah, you got to do a bit of both, really, I think, to be properly successful, or else you could spend a day or two on a hill glassing a valley or something like that, but the deer could be just below you or just around the next corner. So... It pays to be mobile, absolutely, but you also have to know when to stop and have a look around, because coming around the corner too quickly might expose you to the left or right. So yeah, keep your head on a swivel.
What's your favorite? Do you like to chase with the bow more than the rifle, or?
I try to get out the bow, but I don't know. I just love me rifles. Always have.
I'm the same. I do up bow hunting when I've had the twins, because I was like, all right, I'm not going to be able to get out much. And we don't have too much family around, so I had to stay home with the wife. So we sort of was lucky enough I could take a couple of months off to help out. And I thought I'd be bow hunting or at least shooting a lot, and that didn't really happen. But I've really, as they're getting older, start to spend a bit more time. I'm lucky enough to be on a bit of land, so I'm able to practice regularly. It's hard, because I love shooting rifles, but then I thoroughly enjoy running the bow as well.
Feels a bit more sporty with the bow, doesn't it? It's a lot more skill involved, that's for sure.
I think you're right. I find that when I'm out with the bow, I'm so much slower. When I'm with the rifle, I'm probably not, and it's probably something I need to work on myself. But yeah, I really find with the bow, I'm probably thinking about it a lot more and more worried about spooking something, because you do have to get so damn close. Whereas with the rifle, as you said, if you're spotting something a kilometer away, depending how accurate you are and how confident you are, you could.
I might be able to bloody shoot thing. Yeah.
I know people that can shoot from there comfortably. So it's one of those things where, as a bow, I'd probably never shoot anything further than sort of 30 meters. That would be the zone that I'm pretty confident in, and I wouldn't want to step out past that.
I think of that range is a good, I like that, because you can be more sure of a cleaner kill, which is very important as well, which is another thing I sort of shy away from bow hunting a little bit, because sometimes you just haven't really made the perfect shot, and you just wait that animal out, obviously, and wait for it to expire. Whereas with a rifle, it's nice and clean. I've always enjoyed the fact that I look at it this way: what better way to go? You've had an excellent natural life, and you've had your herd of does, and you're getting on in age, and sooner or later, some young buck's going to come over that hill and he's going to flog the piss out of you, and you're probably going to get out of here wounded, maybe die a terrible death, or you could have some rooster like us come in and lights out, buddy, and then you go on to the circle of life that way. It's nice.
I think it's important, that sort of side of things, and I don't think people get that you know, nature is about that. The strongest survive. And as you get older, you slow down, and you need, as you said, those young bucks are coming through, and that's important that from a genetic perspective, there's so many elements to it that just the circle of life sums it up perfectly, because that's what it is. And I just love that. I also love that with the journey and my journey through hunting and the different types. And, you know, you're doing something similar. You got the dog now, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Got myself a little pointer, a German wire hair. She's a good girl. She's just coming into that mature age where she's really starting to show some interest. It's really nice.
Is that a different level for you? Have you found that because of the time and effort you're investing in the dog, that's a new challenge almost?
Oh, yeah. Never hunted with a pointer dog ever. So I was lucky that our mate, he actually helped me out with sending me through a lot of tips, because he obviously paid for a course and things like that, and he went and did the training with a bloke and stuff like that. But then he'd get on Messenger with me and say, hey, why don't you try this, and why don't you give this a crack, and it just could be anything from household habits to throwing a leg out there, keeping the scent fresh in the yard, and keeping the nose active. And then, like you said just before, the effort that I've put into keeping that dog kind of focused on hunting deer is rewarding now, seeing her catch a scent and then say, hey, mate, let's go this way. Literally, she'll talk to you. She'll literally growl at me like, oh, over here, mate. I'm like, oh, crap, off we go. We're walking. Sure enough, there's a bedding area. And she might not be right onto it just yet, and she might not have found that deer, but she's onto it, sort of thing, and she's learning what to look for. And that's just awesome. That's an awesome feeling to have invested so much time into an animal and have it love the hunt just as much as you do too.
That just sounds so primal. It takes me back hearing you talk about, you know, hunting with the dog, and just I think, when did that first happen? When was it that, you know, men were there and the dogs came in and learnt and trained, and you know, how long did that take? And you know, questions we'll never know the answer to, probably. But I just sit there and go, would we be what we are today without that? And then being able to still do it today, there's something really cool about that. Something cool about that,
isn't it? Yeah, right. It's nearly a symbiotic relationship, because we both need food. We're both hungry, and hey, if we work together, mate, like the indigenous used to work with the animals here in Australia too. My mob used to work with the dolphins out here in Moreton Bay, and so there's still the fish traps. I think you can still see them today, where they'd go out and they'd shiv their spears into the sand, and the dolphins would come into the bay, and they'd round up the fish and then help them herd all the fish into the fish traps, and then, you know, one for you, one for me, mate. Down at Eaton's Whaling Bay, the indigenous community down there actually hunted with the killer whales, which is how, when they came through and found it, the whalers actually started using the killer whales to go and help them hunt whales as well. An incredible story if you ever look at Eaton's Whaling Bay. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No, I'm not, no.
Yeah, it's just things like that even here in Australia, right? Yeah, you might know a few.
It is. It's one of those things. I don't get why people have this perception of hunters that we don't love animals or love nature.
Oh, we love them. We love them. I think more than anybody else. Yeah, I could say that, like, for sure.
Oh, man, I'm with you. I sit there and just the best experiences I've had have been out in the bush, and just there's a respect, and I say it all the time, chasing deer, they are such a brilliant, brilliant animal. Their
beautiful
senses,
animal.
They're gorgeous just to look at. And I'm mesmerized by them. You know, sometimes there's, you know, if I'm out there, it's just great to watch them. I said this the other week. I was on a private property a mate took me to, and there was a heap on the other side of the fence. So we obviously couldn't pull the trigger because we didn't have access. But, man, we sat there for ages and just watched them just grazing and, you know, being alert. And I'm a fiend for a trail camera and watching a video.
Yeah.
And just I set it to video settings because I want to see what's going on and just see them moving and, yeah, you know, see the differences between species. And have you had the chance to hunt Samba?
No, I really want to hunt Samba. Oh, I can't wait to get down to Vic and get in some high country hunts. That's probably going to happen this year, I'm thinking. Nice good trip down there.
Mate, that's the one. I was watching these videos and the fallow and Samba are just so different. Fallow are a bit more relaxed. The Samba are just cagey. They're just like sneaking through. Like I was watching this video and I had a good 30 seconds of it and you just see just the way they move. And there was a mum and her, you know, probably yearling or so, and just that they're not together. There was a good gap and it was almost like a bit of leap. Not leapfrog, but I'll catch you up, then she'll push and then catch up and push.
They say they're similar to the chittle deer. I've hunted chittle. And Christ almighty, they're a hard animal to hunt, eh? Because they're like, as you say, they'll actually move out in a grid. So there'll be little groups and they'll just, the herd is actually spread out in these little cells, right? Because the sambar and the chittle grew up in India, where there's tigers and all these things that are just expert stalkers, like elite level. And then, I used to get busted by these bloody chittle all the time when I was hunting with bows, because I'd be looking at this mob here. I'm going to get up and I'm going to pull an arrow back, but I didn't see these buggers over here. And they're bucked, and then the whole herd just shifts and off they go. And bloody hell. And they say the sambar are just as hard. And, oh, Christ, some frustrating hunts on the chittle, eh?
They are such a beautiful animal. Their heights, unbelievable. Just gorgeous-looking creatures. And they just blend in so well. It's funny, isn't it? For such a non-native species, and, you know, they just blend into the bush and melt away.
But when when you see them, they're so vibrant and bright. Wearing high viz somehow, still hiding.
It's pretty crazy, especially when they, you know, I don't know where you've hunted them and what's up there, but, you know, seeing them in Lantana and things like that just disappearing, it's just crazy. And I know even with the fallow, you know, with blackberry and that, they just go and they're like a ghost. You know, they'll be there 1 minute and gone the next. And
isn't that their nickname? Silently.
Yeah, ghosts of the forest.
Yeah. I can't wait to go have a crack at them. Yeah, that's going to be a hard hunt.
I haven't done much. I've got super excited because a couple of state forests that I hunt, I've got them on the trail camera and I'm starting to find a lot more sign for them, and that's a goal. I do want to, you know, chase them in a state forest and whatnot. But they are just, they're next level. Everyone I talk to, just when they tell me about the hunts and how switched on they are, that they're just the hardest deer species to chase. Gets me excited. Awesome. I love a challenge. And I think that's what I like about hunting too. I think people have this perception that you just walk out and there's 20, 30 just sitting in a paddock and you pop it. And look, in some cases, there probably are. But for hunting state forests or public land down here in New South Wales, man, it is just a challenge. And it is, I love it.
Well, every deer species is different, isn't it? So I've been teaching a few mates just not being able to spot the animal and not knowing that the spots they like, and you know, you say, oh mate, you know, we're not just gonna wander off here aimlessly. The deer's like this spot here, and I know there's a dam up there, so we might check around that. And sambar just be a whole nother ball game apparently, because they're just, their personalities are in there, because that's what they got. They got a different personality and a different nature. And yeah, so it's going to be interesting to throw another tool in the toolbox, eh?
Mate, it's like that. And I think they're all different, but they all have some sort of passion for me. Like, I grew up spearfishing, and that's just, I don't know if you spearfish, but
I've done a bit.
And I love it. Love it. Just
a noisy reef, isn't it? You think it's quiet down there, but it's not. and it's alive and it's moving.
100%. And especially when you just, you know, it's different. I'm nowhere near as good as a few of my mates. They can hold their breath for quite a few minutes. And I watch them just drop down and just sit there and see all the fish come to them because they're so curious. And I'd love to be able to do that, but pretty bad asthma. I don't think I could ever get to the level that they
you
get could.
In the bottom and you have a bit of a look around and you, oh, that'll do me. And then, well, I seen something under that rock over there. I'll come back down.
That's me. I'm sort of, you know, up and down like a yo-yo. And my mates are just still sitting down there. It's painful.
But I understand.
So cool. And then even being able to pull like lobsters and, oh, man, it's just unreal. I loved it up. My parents live up in Queensland and I remember some of the – when they first moved up there, I got right into the chasing mud crabs. And that was just unfreaking believable. I had so much fun just putting out the pots, getting mud crabs, cooking them up, and it was just delicious. So, and then the fishing up there was so good. I think we're so damn lucky in this country that we've got such natural resource abundance and we can do these things and we can create memories in the outdoors. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Do you fish as well?
Yeah, I love a bit of fishing. Absolutely. In Brisbane, it's hard, but going up with Sundays, you know, get amongst that. And Torres Strait Islander boys, they used to bloody go pull crabs out their holes with their arms. Well, I've done it a couple of times, and it's not something I like doing, sticking me in a crab hole. They're like, they go in forward, they come out backwards. So you're right. I'm like, yeah, maybe not.
I do like my fingers. It's especially as a hunter, there's a couple I definitely need.
They get in with a hook though, so like, I just don't trust it. I've seen where my arm is and where my fingers are because they are just too important for me.
Mate, I love seeing the photos, you know, when the mud crabs come out and they've got those buddy nippers and your the claws, and they're the same size as a beer bottle.
Yeah.
And it's like, Jesus. All right, imagine that thing grabbing hold of you.
Oh, I've been bitten by a couple of them. One time on me thigh here, the thing jumped out of the esky and cracked me as I was leaning over to get a beer. And I didn't know what to do, so bit like there's a little tendon you nick in there, but I only learned that on this day, mind you, because it was a bit of a desperate situation. And they bloody hurts, and he was a big crab. And so you see blokes get pinched and you're just like, nah, don't envy you. Nah, no way.
Nah, not at all. There's some things I'm not concerned about getting nabbed by. Like snakes, I don't care too much, especially pythons. I've had like 8-foot diamond pythons crack me and wrap me and whatnot. And I had a mate get done by a lace monitor or a goanna, and he got about 36 stitches. And I've never worried about that side of things, never really fussed me much. But the crabs, I think it's a different level. Yeah. You know, I've grabbed them a couple of times and I just see the pros, how they just grab them and hold them and then they wrap them. Yeah. And, you know, I've had a bit of a play and, man, I'm nowhere near good to do it. And I just go, nah, not for me. I'll take it a bit
with
easier.
It, eh? Yeah. All
right. I suppose like anything, it's a skill that you learn and, I don't know if I want to put my bare foot on the back of them and start to wrap them up with some cord. I'll pass. I'll let someone more experienced do that one. What's the next, I guess, you know, Samba's on the list. What else, you know, is there any hunting journeys coming up this year?
I'd like to pop back over to New Zealand. I'm definitely going to go out for another chittle hunt. But the high country is probably the big ticket one there. Definitely just down in Victor, get out in the forest and try to get myself a nice sandbar. I'm looking at some blow-up boats and things like that to get up there and minimalizing my pack as much as possible, just lightweight, long range. You can get some pretty damn lightweight and robust pack rafts these days. So it'd be really nice to follow a river up and raft down with the meat. So, a lot of things going on in that regard, so... just trying to plan that one out.
Mate, I don't know if you've seen it. Beyond the Divide, Rob Flickling and Dan, who does Into the Mountains, they did a couple of episodes on hunting sambar down there in the high country and rafting in.
I think I have actually seen them.
great viewing and is on my bucket list. It looked amazing. And just getting into some of those spots, just being able to, you know, follow the river down, pull up and set up camp and then use that as base camp for the day to go out and glass and chase Samba. And it was just such a props to them. Great product that they put out there. And I love watching it. And really good.
Oh, I'll let you know when I'm going, mate. We'll bloody go together.
I'd be definitely keen for that because it just looks, it looks cool. Like just getting into some of the bush that they were in and some of the spots, it's just awesome. And you know, they've got some good gear there for the rifles, like some airtight, like a wet dry bag that's for the rifle Moroka 30. Some really top quality gear there for it.
But Moroka,
yeah, looks good. Was sort of tossing up when I just bought a new scope on the rifle, but Maven, they run like this 340 gram scope. That on one of the rifles, oh man, walking up and down those high country hills, it would just be very, very nice on the shoulder.
340 grams, or maybe on a nice Ticker GX3 light.
Well, that's what I just got. I just got the Aspire and 308. Man, it's nice. I was a bit worried about the oversized bolt handle, but now I love it. Absolutely love it. Just cycling it. Just compared to, I've got two Tickers now, both T3Xs. Love them both. But I do really like the bolt handle now. I thought I wouldn't, but I've actually been converted. I sort of want the other one to be like that now. Ugh, such a good rifle. Such a nice, just the way it sits.
Beauty.
And feels
beautiful.
And balance. And it's that's a problem, isn't it? Like, I do love the bow hunting side, but then I just love shooting as well. I love getting out there and it's, I wish I had more time just to do it all.
Yeah, we all need more time, don't we?
It is. It's one of those things. But, mate, it's been really good having you on. Really appreciate your time. Super, super excited to watch you on this journey over there in New Zealand. It's Alone Season 2. Man, it sounds so damn cool. Getting to go over to New Zealand, what a picturesque venue. Oh, I'm envious. I'm really envious. I hope you do amazing. So I'll be cheering for you for sure. If you don't know when to tune in, guys, it's Wednesday, the 27th of March, 2024, obviously, and you can catch it on SBS and SBS On Demand. Get behind Chase. Let's hope he does fantastic because I'd love to see a hunter take it out, obviously, and he's such a good bloke. So, mate, best of luck. I've got my fingers crossed for you. I hope that, you know, in a couple of months' time, that season finale, it'll be you there and I'll be able to, you know, give you a yell and say, congrats. Bloody well done.
Thank you very much. Hey, every contestant's amazing on it too, so you won't be disappointed. It's going to be a good watch. You won't be disappointed with the contestants, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm super excited. I'm hanging for it. As I said, there's a week to go and I'm counting it down because I'm just so pumped to watch it. So, all right, mate, really appreciate your time. Fingers crossed for you. We'll be backing you for sure. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. Bye for now.
Thanks, Matt. Bye.
If you have a topic, guest, question, or any gear that you want to hear about on the podcast, shoot us an email, australianhuntingandbeyond@gmail.com. Alternatively, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All the links are in the show notes. If you haven't already, make sure you give us a review and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.